Canada's Morning News with Pam Cook continues now.
All right, it is a Monday morning. Happy Halloween, everyone. 21 minutes after 8. Of course, every Monday we have a chance to talk with State Senator Kirk Schering. He's on our WHBC Newsline right now. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Pam.
Happy Halloween, by the way.
Well, thank you. You too.
I heard Billy ask you what your favorite candy was, but I didn't hear the answer. What was it?
Well, I'm not much into candy. I do a lot of other things that make me fat. but we found that over the years that our trick-or-treaters really like Reese's peanut butter cups.
Mm-hmm. That's number one.
That made me.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
We're good.
All right. All right, well, let's move to a more serious subject. Obviously, last week we were talking about Indian River and everything that had happened there, and you had mentioned that you were going to chat with the folks, and you did that, correct?
Yes. Last Wednesday, I met with the director of the Department of Youth Services in my Columbus office, Director Amy Ast. Pam, she's got decades of experience with the Department of Youth Services. She actually started her career as a correction officer. They call them now youth service specialists. But I thought our conversation was very informative and very thoughtful. You know, we talked about what happened at Indian River on Saturday, the 22nd of October, but it came to my conclusion early on that this issue about how we operate our youth services facilities. We have three in Ohio, one in Cuyahoga County, another one in Circleville, and then the third one in Massillon at Indian River. But there are many factors are swirling around the general atmosphere at these facilities. A lot of what happens, as I mentioned when we talked last week, is a product of over a decade of litigation that was adjudicated in the courts, and the courts' decisions have affected the way that the operations work at these facilities. There's also something going on now. This is it's a converging force. Now, we all know if you talk to anybody in the private sector and even in the public sector, there's a shortage of workers right now. But what's happening in these youth services facilities, it's a converging force that is really causing some concern. And that is, you've got a low number of correction officers, youth specialists, and there's been an increase of crime in, among young people that has caused their populations or facilities to grow. Part of that is every generation, there's a different personality, and the teens that are incarcerated at these facilities now, over 50% of them, Pam, have a mandatory sentence because they committed their crime while using a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they call a gun specification, and that causes there to be a mandatory sentence. But what we got down to at some point in time, she started to tell me, well, here's some of the things that they're dealing with that maybe we need to address at some point in time. It's hard to find workers. We said that. I said that earlier. They start at $21 an hour. And the problem is because there's a shortage of workers, now when you start hiring people, they don't have the training.
Yeah.
So combination of trying to find the workers, and then when you do, they don't have the training. They'll eventually get the training, but they start off with a minimum amount of training. They have these court decisions that they have to be concerned with, and then the personnel. This is a big one. The personality of the teens is much different today than it was years ago. Most of them, the teens, are members of gangs. And they subscribe to a very violent doctrine, and they're anti-establishment. With that said, however, we can't paint all these institutions with the same broad stroke of the brush. She said that 94% of the young people at Indian River are well-behaved. So we need to emphasize that. There was 12 that got out of control, some of whom are in the county jail. But most of the young people at Indian River and the other two facilities are well behaved. So it begs the question, after I sat there with her, I said, okay, what do we do? Because you've described some things that I think need to be corrected. So she and I are exploring the idea of establishing a task force that would study the issues at these three facilities and the issues that are problematic, and then trying to figure out how we're going to solve them.
Yeah, and I would say, because, you know, we're hearing from parents and, you know, even, you know, and a lot of this is anonymous from, you know, workers that used to work there, right. You know, saying that it's just rough in there because, like you say, there's a lack of help and it's a tough situation. And the youth are not, you know, they're not abiding by the things that they need to. And there's no repercussions because they don't have enough help to, you know, sustain the repercussions and all the, it just seems like it's a, you know, a catch 22. It just keeps, you know, it's snowballing. And I guess, you know, people, they're just looking for answers.
Right. And that's what this task force would do. Here's some things that we need to be taking a look at with this task force. What is the pay scale? You know, it's hard to get people to start at a facility like that at $22 an hour. So we need to be, and by the way, the budget's coming up, so that would be a perfect vehicle to address the pay scale. We also need to make sure that when they come into a facility, that they're properly trained. And then the use of force, you know, we want to make sure one thing that I think that the study should also strongly consider is the health and safety of the young people incarcerated there. When things get out of control, like they did on Saturday, the 22nd of October, not only were the youth specialists at risk, but all the other teens who were at the facility could have been harmed too. So we just got to look at ways to make sure that when a young person's in one of these facilities, that the health and safety of that young person is paramount. We want to increase the ratios of the youth specialists to the number incarcerated, body cameras. You know, there's many more things that we need to take a look at. But as you've discovered, and I've discovered with the phone calls that you're getting and I'm getting, there's a myriad of issues. Some will say that the youth service specialist is, they're sleeping on the job. Others would say that's because they're working overtime. And then some would say, well, some of these teens who get out of control, there's a lack of ability because of some of these court decisions to control them and to get everything back in order. So we need to look at it, and we need to address it. And because if we don't, I'm afraid that these types of situations will occur again.
How quickly do you think you'll be putting it together?
Well, that's a great question, because there's two ways we can do this. One, I need to talk to my Senate President, Matt Huffman, to see if he would support me in an effort to do something legislatively. The problem with that, you got to introduce a bill, and then by Ohio law, it takes 90 days for it to take effect. Or we could work, the Senate President and I could work with the governor to ask him to use an executive order to establish the task force. So as I just said that, I think probably the better way to do it would have the governor institute an executive order to establish the task force, and then have the timing of that such that when the task force renders their report, it would be in the time that we would be in the middle of the budget, and we could maybe do some things, not just as it relates to an appropriation, but also some language that would be part of Ohio law that would, again, help make the situation better at these three facilities.
All right. All right. Well, a lot to consider, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot in the future. I really appreciate the update, Kirk. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Pam. Thank you.